Hey, this is David Queens, aka O'Reilly. I don't usually listen to podcasts. When I do, I listen to Vid in the City, Locks of the Week Radio. Bitches.
Coast to coast, internet sports talk, Locks of the Week.
Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Let him play!
Yeah, everybody have a show today. We have snow today, show today, show tomorrow.
I don't know if you want that on your credit card bill. You know, saying the WC network on it. I mean, like,
your dad would look at it and be like, Dave, you have something to tell me?
That's the story that they still play.
It's unbelievable!
You have your LeBron in the filet. It's like, do you really care about the James Jones at the end of the bench against Haters?
Maybe the board, the MikeFrancesa.com, was just ahead of its time.
Pioneers.
Exactly, yeah.
Pioneers, if you will.
We listen to this guy sit at a desk, picking his teeth every day, and all the dumb stuff he does. But it's not like we're changing the dial. We like Mike. You know, we hate Mike, we love Mike, all that back and forth.
Bingo.
Unbelievable.
The San Antonio Spurs, Dave. What do they say about him?
They're boring.
They're boring!
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big Wednesday show on a special Open Championship recap program. Good to have you with us. We're here at blogtalkradio.com/Dave in the City and youtube.com/DitKow for the video program. Tonight, in our program on this beautiful evening in Santa Monica, we are joined by John in Connecticut and Mike in North Jersey for the Open Championship particulars on a weekend that featured Rory McIlroy just dominating the course at Royal Liverpool and getting the claret jug. A great moment for Rory McIlroy. It's just a huge story for golf because you're talking about a guy who has been waiting for that big moment. He's really been struggling at times. He's had flashes of brilliance, but we knew that the talent was always there. And this is why I think this is a big moment for golf. I just love it. I mean, three majors for Rory McIlroy before the age of 20, by the age of 25. That's just pretty impressive. Like, golf majors are tough to win at all. Some guys can go most of their career without even winning a single one, but he certainly got the job done. So we look forward to hearing from John and Mike in just a moment. But first, just quickly, I want to tell you a quick story about a 2-pound lobster. And so basically what happened was last night I was at a place called Enterprise Fish Company with my friend Coach, and we were about to enjoy dinner. Well, not dinner. We were just there for drinks and appetizers. But then I saw a big sign on the front. It said, a $32 lobster special. And I said, wow, that sounds pretty good. I mean, I might want to try that out. Had my eye on that sign for a while. Because they show that every year, the 2-pound lobster special. And so I decided I'll give it a try. And so, you know, I felt a little adventurous, daring, if you will. I was really into it. So then I ordered it, and everybody was like, whoa, lobster, oh my goodness, I mean, can you finish the whole thing? And I was like, well, I mean, I've had lobster before, not too bad. I mean, it's not terribly filling, not super filling, but I had no idea how big a 2-pound lobster was. Well, it kind of came to find out that thing was huge. It was like this big, and whatever you thought that the biggest lobster you ever had was, double it, because like I thought, oh, this is great. And then I'm like, oh, there's another half of that. So everybody was looking at me eating this thing. I was just like, you know, taking the tiny fork and the drawn butter and the lemon, and I was enjoying this 2-pound lobster, and it was definitely delicious, definitely a sight to see, to say the least. It was really, really a lot of fun going after it, and it was split in half already. So most of the work was done, but you still had to break open the claw. So they gave you like the little nut, you know, the little claw cracker. So you could also call it a nutcracker. And so I did that, and you know, I was eating the thing, and apparently I don't think anyone else tried it, because I was at the bar eating this thing, and people were just gathering around, like watching me eat this thing, and it was so funny at the end. Everybody gave me, started clapping for me. I just thought that was pretty funny. So that was a good time. I recommend it if you're at Enterprise Fish Company, either in Santa Barbara or in Santa Monica, like I was last night. Try the lobster special. It runs throughout the summer, and I think you'll enjoy it. The price of it depends on which one you go to, but it's very reasonable, almost half the price of a regular lobster dinner. And it comes with two sides, and you get sourdough bread with it, so it's really a good deal. And one great deal from the world of golf is the luck, the hand of luck that was dealt to Rory McIlroy. But it was more than luck. It was sheer dominance. And now to help us break it down, we introduced our two guests of the hour, and they would be John in Connecticut and Mike in North Jersey. Back on the program, let's introduce John first. John, welcome back to the show. How is it going tonight on this very special Open Championship preview?
Doing great, Dave. Thanks for having me on again. I think Mike missed our last recap of the U.S. Open, so it's good to have him back in the mix. So it should be fun.
Yeah, we missed you, Mike. Mike, welcome back to the program. How's it going tonight?
Dave, I wasn't aware a two-pound lobster was that big. I mean, I know a few places down in the Ironbound section of Newark, you can get it's a lobster for two, but it'll be like 6 to 8 pounds.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, maybe next time you come to the tri-state area, I can take you down there, and you know, you can really have a good lobster story.
Ooh.
For the cast.
So it's like three times as big as this. That blows my mind. No, that's great, man. Thanks for recommending that. I'd love to check that out. I imagine that the prices of lobster on the East Coast are okay. They're not too bad. But either way, that sounds really good. Yeah, I'll take you up on that. So, Mike, this is a big moment, and you've been rooting for Rory McIlroy for some time. Rory McIlroy getting this win in the Open is a huge story, I think, because I think golf needed that anchor, that centerpiece, that star. And Rory always had the talent. It's just fun to see him do this. Like, your thoughts about what he did to get to this Open Championship.
Well, I think golf needs a particular player that isn't named Rory McIlroy. But no, in all seriousness, we'll get to that player who you know who I'm talking about later.
Oh, man.
Anyway, yeah. It was definitely a big moment for golf. A few of the golf writers that I respect, one of them is Jeff Shackelford, and he always thought that McIlroy's glass ceiling would be playing a real, like a tight kind of links course like this. Now, granted, the wind didn't blow that much, but it's not like they played in a dome either this entire week. All of McIlroy's wins, even his non-major wins, have come on courses that you can say are big, just in nature, wide fairways, long, etc., and rain soak. So they're soft, meaning he can fire at pins and be aggressive with his lines. He doesn't have to worry about run out. Now, that wasn't the case here at all. Now, the winds were down. Yeah, it got softened a little bit. But you could see it's like a links golf course. If you're taking a wedge even into the green, you know, it's going to have some run on it. And despite his height on his shots and you know, the tremendous asset that gives him, you know, he had to account for the run out, and he had to account for the run out on his tee shots. And a lot of those driving lines, if you look at them, they're really tricky. And there's also a lot more undulation at Royal Liverpool than appears on TV. Really, you have to go around and look at some of the photos of it. But so really, he cracked what some people thought was his glass ceiling, was winning in at a course and in conditions like this. And frankly, I thought that the Open Championship might be the hardest one for him to get, because 3 years ago it was said, he said himself, you know, that he doesn't like golf tournaments that are decided so much by the weather, and that he'd rather play when it's 80 degrees and sunny. But he really took a lesson from Phil Mickelson, who struggled mightily at the British Open for years, who, you know, last year he kind of changed his attitude about it and sort of embraced the challenge. Oh, well, okay, I need to learn to play golf this way. And then McIlroy went over, he played the Scottish Open, which he played well in, except for the Friday collapse, which he managed to avoid this week. And I think it's really that attitude, the, you know, sort of embracing the challenge, that allowed him to be in the right place of mind to have his best game. And we've seen now for three seasons, or four seasons, really. When McIlroy is at his best, you're not going to beat him. And you know, he becomes the only the third golfer in the modern major era, so that's since the formation of the Masters in 1934, to have won three major championships and be three quarters of the way to the Grand Slam by age 25. So, yeah, this is a huge moment for golf. And if there's any doubt that this guy is the future and that he didn't just get hot and, you know, win a couple majors in 2 years at a young age, that's not the case. You're going to see him get close to 9, maybe 10 majors. And you know, he's going to be talked about as one of the great golfers of all time. I don't think there's any doubt about that now.
Yeah, three majors before the age of 26. You really can't argue the results. John, your thoughts about Rory McIlroy's big win. I mean, what do you think he did to make this happen?
Well, I think he dumped his girlfriend. I think that was that was a big key, I guess.
I think it contributes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, clearly it was had an effect on his golf game. I don't know. Maybe it freed up his mind to focus, you know, dedicate his whole time on the game. I don't know. But what Mike summed everything up there pretty nicely. I mean, he's just got an unbelievable amount of talent. He drives the ball probably better than anyone on PGA Tour. And, you know, when he's playing well, he's really tough to beat. And he showed again this weekend why he's going to be one of the next golfers probably we've seen. He's just got to keep that mental focus. I know he's somehow, you know, we've seen had those blow-ups in the second round. We've seen it a couple of times in majors. We've seen it in the fourth round. Augusta a couple of years ago. So he's just got to be mentally, you know, stable. And more majors should come his way. His style play definitely fits all these courses that are, you know, increasingly becoming longer and longer as they add yardage and try to, you know, used to be tiger-proof, of course, but when these guys just hit the ball so long anyway, it just doesn't matter anymore.
No, I mean, it's incredible the amount of distance that you get out of the best golfers in the game. It was really impressive. And as you guys both mentioned, the Friday collapse is a very common thing for Rory McIlroy. We've seen even this year, we've seen him really come apart in the in the next three rounds after a hot start, and that was really where you started to think this could get serious, because he had a 66 on the first round. He turned that around, and even though one might think, oh, he was going to let up here, he's shot another 66. His drives are impeccable, and he was doing pretty well in the short game too. So, Mike, I mean, speak to some more about McIlroy in terms of. I have to check my battery in my phone. Oh, my charger, but on my computer charger. But anyway, speak about Rory McIlroy and some of his keys. You mentioned the drives, but what else about his ability to be mentally tough? Really, especially in that last round, because remember, he had a couple of bogeys in the front nine, and then he got them back with a couple of birdies. I mean, do you feel like he's overcome a hurdle in terms of his mental focus in these championships?
Well, really, I think the hurdle that was faced to him, you know, in majors, you know, came at the 2011 Masters, where he shot the 80 in the final round, you know, sitting on the four-stroke lead. If we want to talk about the hurdles that he might have overcome this week, yes, the Friday thing, but I think that was more flukish than anything else. I really don't know how to describe exactly what's going on there, because, you know, if someone's, you know, getting tight on Sunday and shooting in the mid-70s, you can be like, oh, well, you know, he can't handle the pressure. On Friday, you know, that's a little bit odd, and but it was something that we had to pay attention to, obviously, going into the final round, to say, I wonder what's going to happen here. But one thing I thought he did very well this week was that he stayed patient on his rounds, especially the second and third, and even the final round, too. If you look at rounds two and three, he was one over after four in both rounds, but he goes ahead, he birdies the par five fifth, and then he knows that he has three par fives on the back, and he took advantage of them, because on Thursday, Friday, he shoots 33, 33 on the back, I mean on Friday, Saturday. And if you want to talk about what really won him the championship, it's Saturday going eagle, bogey, eagle on the final three holes. And then if you include 14, and 14 is not a birdie hole at Hoylake, he birdied that hole. So he plays the final five holes at four under par. And those two approaches into 16 and 18, the par fives, are two of the best shots I've ever seen. I mean, it's incredible that someone can hit a mid-to-long iron with that amount of height and have it land like a wedge. It's absolutely unreal, and that kind of shows you that he knew to stay patient and just play to his strength, which is the ability to hit the ball high in the air and, you know, not to rush things. And that really was a key, because that's what won him the tournament. If you look at him being 400 in those five holes compared to Sergio or Ricky Fowler, you'll see that was a difference, and that gave him a huge lead because it was tied up at one point on Saturday, but he stayed patient and he played to his strengths, and that's what won him the tournament.
Yeah, it did. And you know, and unlike Martin Keimer on during the U.S. Open, we did at least see some competition in that final round. You mentioned the two guys that were behind him, Sergio Garcia and Ricky Fowler. I got to tell you, they both made a good name. They both did pretty well for themselves, particularly on Sunday. Just an incredible job, and especially in the case of Sergio Garcia. I counted only one birdie in his final round, and he had just an electric front nine in that final round. He really did make some great shots, but he became a little more human towards the end. Ricky Fowler just simply did a great job. I think he shot I think he had like under 70 every round, but he still lost because something like that. I forget what it was, but John, let's chat a little bit about Ricky Fowler and his ability to manage himself, and then a little bit about the two runners up of the tournament. Your thoughts about Rory's patience and then his competition.
Yeah, Mike is right. Rory won the tournament, I think, on Saturday when he was kind of struggling midway through his round and they had caught him. And then he plays the last, four or five holes with an unbelievable stretch and gets his lead right back up to six shots. And really, you knew at that point he was going to face a challenge on Sunday, but he would really have to play terrible golf to blow it. And I think they got within, two or three on Sunday, and that was really – only due to the fact that Sergio, like you mentioned, was playing out of his mind on the front nine, but they really never going to threaten him. So I think that was the key, that Saturday stretch of holes for him to win the tournament. As for his competition, I can't say enough about Ricky Fowler. I mean, this guy, I've been a critic of his, he's getting a lot of attention for a guy who really hasn't won anything. He's only has one win on the PGA Tour. But here he is now, top five in all three majors so far this season. Only guy who can say that. Two runner-up finishes the last two majors. And really, any other week, he would have won the tournament. Four rounds in the 60s. It just so happens McIlroy was on another level. So you got to like his chances heading into the next major, the PGA. And he's just been doing some great work lately with Butch Harmon. So kudos to Ricky Fowler. Good to see him playing some good golf. I know he's really popular, and I wouldn't mind seeing him get a major here sooner or later.
Yeah, and a good nod, good job out of you, nodding to Butch Harmon, apparently one of the great stroke coaches in the game, and Mike to John's point about Ricky Fowler, this is definitely one of the best performances I've ever seen of his. You really can't go wrong with the way he played. The timing just wasn't there. I gotta tell you, I mean, he's really been trying to make a bigger commitment to being a serious golfer. And trying to improve upon his substance rather than his style. And I think, we talked about this on previous casts. I mean, I think some of this this work ethic is paying off. And I just wanted to ask you quickly about Butch Harmon and what he brings to the table. Because, it's true. I mean, he's really taken every person he brings under his wing and made them significantly better. Your thoughts about both Butch Harmon and Ricky Fowler?
Well, it's clear this year that Ricky Fowler's made a commitment to be known for his golf rather than his style. you know, a couple of years ago, he was hanging out with Bubba Watson, going to Bible study, had the long hair, and dressed like a creamsicle on Sunday. That's not the case anymore. He's finally realized, you know, if I really want to compete at this level, I am going to need some help with my swing. I can't go at it alone. That's not the very realistic path. And he turned to, well, in my opinion, the best swing coach in the game, who is Butch Harmon. And what makes Butch Harmon so good at what he does is that he finds a way to shore up some technical details of your swing without completely overhauling the natural motion that you develop, unlike some people like Sean Foley, who will teach the same swing to every single player, and you have Tiger Woods swinging like a 70-year-old man now at this point. But that's what makes Butch Harmon so great at what he does, is that he can look at what someone does naturally and just make a couple tweaks to it, and it'll have you playing much better. And I think Ricky Fowler, though, before he wins a major, is going to have to win a couple regular tour events just to get the, you know, the winning, whatever you want to call it, into his system. Because really, one time in 4 years, it's a bit much. That he is someone who looks like he raises his game on the biggest stage. But he's going to have to win, I think, just a couple regular tour events, and then he'll probably be primed to win a major next season if he can do that.
Yeah, that is an interesting observation, though. I mean, only one tour win, period. I mean, usually you get about a handful of tour victories by, you know, in your first 3 or 4 years as a pro. So one in, I don't know how many years he's been playing. He's been playing for at least 5, I think, or maybe 4. I'm not sure, but... But still, I mean, you're something. Eventually, he's going to have to get some regular wins on top of his on top of anything else. So, I mean, I think that moment's at hand, don't you think so, Mike?
Yeah, the way he's trending right now, I'd say he's definitely on his way.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, John. So, any other observations about Fowler or even Sergio at this point? I mean, Sergio. Showing he still has it. That's that was certainly impressive. A lot of the same, you know, great shots that he's had when he was younger. It's kind of weird that people would make observations about, oh, these young guys like Ricky Fowler and Sergio, and I'm like, Sergio's not young. He's pretty old now, actually. So, your thoughts about the about them and then some of the other guys who were in on the leaderboard.
Yeah, I mean, time is now or never, I guess, for Sergio. I mean, I want to say he's like, what, 35 or so. So he's definitely in the prime of his career. Last year, he's been knocking on the door, you know, many times in the recent years. So you got to figure one of these weeks is just going to break right for him and he's going to win one of these things. But, you know, we'll see. He's definitely playing some good golf, too. That's what I've had on the leaderboard. I mean, there really isn't much to say. Dustin Johnson kind of folded on Sunday. Not really that surprised about that. And really, other than that, I mean, you have a couple guys with some backdoor top tens like Glenn McDowell, and there's another guy that shot well on Sunday, I forget. But really, it was just about those three guys, Sergio, Fowler, and then obviously McIlroy. That was where the main focus of the coverage was on Sunday. Obviously, other than Tiger, of course, as he was tearing up the course three hours ahead of time, but that's another story.
Oh my goodness, Tiger Woods. I mean, you know, you guys were way right about Paul Azinger. I finally got to hear some of his comments, and I mean, even after the tournament, he was like, well, this is a chance for Tiger Woods to really get judge himself against the youth. But, dude, this is not about Tiger. I mean, what does Tiger have to do with any of this? You have to name drop Tiger after Rory McIlroy had a very convincing finish in the Open. It's just crazy that you can't completely escape the Mongo Tiger comments. And I like Tiger Woods. I mean, I enjoyed his career and everything. But it's like, guys, there's some guys that just can't let it go. Other than that, I thought that the golf, the ESPN broadcasts were terrific. But let's comment a bit about the broadcasters of this tournament. I will start with Mike.
Well, the great thing about the British Open is the almost ridiculous hours of coverage that they give you. On Thursday and Friday, they went from 4 a.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern time.
Wow.
Which is just
and I was up at 4 a.m., which caused a certain member of the board to tell me I need to reevaluate my life. But
who said this?
When you're asking questions about staining decks and having affairs on a forum dedicated to Mike Francesa, I really don't think you should be telling other people they need to reevaluate their life. But yeah, getting back on point.
Seriously.
Yeah. It was enjoyable having the 11 hours of coverage, although I'm pretty sure Judy Rankin and Dottie Pepper both can't see the ball at this point. You have a 70-year-old woman trudging around out there. I mean, that might qualify as like workplace abuse or something at this point for Judy Rankin. I don't know how you have someone that old walking around the golf course trying to see over people. It's hard to see the ball anyway for someone my size. I don't know how the hell she can see it. But I think we should bring up one golfer who deserves recognition besides the three we've already talked about, and that's Adam Scott. Adam Scott was the only guy who played late Thursday and early Friday that finished anywhere near like the lead. He finished at 12 under par, which if you look at it, you're like, oh, five strokes back. But there was no one else, I think, in the top 15 or something that was on his side of the draw. So Adam Scott, and it's one of the things we talk about now, the draw and how what side of the draw you're on can really affect your chances at the Open. Now, it kind of got mitigated a bit because they did the split tee start on Saturday to avoid the storms. But we really should, you know, give kudos to Adam Scott for putting up such a valiant effort despite being on the bad side of the draw, because he was the only one who did it. And if he had had a early Thursday, late Friday tee time, you know, he might have been right in there, and he could have been right there with Rory, and that would have been a hell of a show to see.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, he's having a pretty good season, to be honest, and I think sometimes scheduling can be the break that you need or the break that doesn't work in your favor, so I totally get that. It totally makes sense. Let's go to John about Adam Scott. I mean, that's an interesting viewpoint. He certainly did look good on the final round. Your thoughts about Adam Scott in this tournament?
Yeah, nothing else to add. Mike summed it up nicely. I'll add, though, on things to reevaluate your life about board members, you know, the board members were talking about, let's not forget how to hook up your iPad, your TV, that's been scared and stuff out there. getting back to the announcers, I mean, I wasn't lucky enough to watch the coverage early Thursday morning when Tiger was shooting 3 under. I'm sure it was, oh, look at this, Tiger's back. And I'm sure Azinger was, you know, doing all he could to prop him up. But then the next day, you know, after he shoots, barely makes the cut and he's the birdie on 18, we go to Azinger in the car and he's like, well, Tiger clearly wasn't ready to play this week. Really, dude, come on. Are you seriously going to say that? But the day before, you were pretty much handing him the credit job and saying he's going to be in the mix on Sunday. I mean, what's the kind of coverage that just makes you want to pull your hair out? I mean, just honestly, if they had said that on Thursday, you know, Tiger's not ready to play, and after he shoots a good round, we'll see what happens. He's still got to go through over 72 holes with this. And that would have been one thing, but, I mean, they just bow down to this guy at every single cost, and it's just really tough to take.
You know, it's funny, and even after all these years, I mean, it just seems like people will not let it go. I realize that Tiger is big for ratings. Like, when he's on the course and when he's doing really well at any given point of the tournament, it's a big deal. But, I mean, once he was out of it, and then by that would be, like, halfway through the second round, basically, things... I mean, because, yeah, I think he started with, like, a double bogey and a bogey on the second round. And I'm like, this is the Tiger Woods we know today. I mean, he'll have a good start. He always has a good start. And then... whether it's age or his bad swing, as Mike mentioned, it just ends up falling apart. Speaking of other guys falling apart, this is somewhat predictable, but Bubba Watson, once again, I mean, the guy is just such a clown. He never really had a chance. I mean, his gunslinger mentality does not work in Lynx golf, and he's such a, what's the word? Horseman? No, I'm trying to figure out, like, USA Mongo, like, you know, kind of a closed-minded guy from the standpoint of international events, that, you know, he just defeats...
He's a redneck.
What was that?
He's a redneck.
A redneck.
He's a redneck.
I think that's about right. Yeah, this guy is total redneck. I mean, he's popular, but it just was really... He was really tough to take this weekend. Mike, any thoughts you had about some of the other losers of the tournament?
Well, real quick about some of the announcers. John, early on Thursday when Tiger was playing well, Azinger was going over his new swing and how it was shorter and how great it was and blah, blah, blah. And then by the end of the tournament, he's saying, well, you know, there's a problem with Tiger's swing. Well, it was great on Thursday and it sucked on Sunday. So, you know, pick a lane there, Paul. And on Sunday, this irked me. They mentioned that Tiger Woods winning 9 out of 30 majors is unquestionably the greatest stretch of golf we have ever seen by anyone ever. Ben Hogan won 9 majors over 16 starts. So let's see, 9 out of 30, 9 out of 16. Which one's better? I'm not sure. But, you know, it kills me to hear that, and that's what bothers me, because an average golf fan is going to have no clue that Ben Hogan did that, and you're just sprouting this nonsense about Tiger and how 9 out of 30 is the greatest stretch you've ever seen. No, it's not. Ben Hogan did much better than that. In fact, he did twice as good as that. And you just hear this nonsense spouted over and over and over again about him. And regarding Bubba Watson, that guy really just has a brick in his head for a brain. as much physical talent as he has, really, he does things that only McIlroy can come close to with a golf ball, and he does things that McIlroy can't do with a golf ball. But I just remember on Friday, he's hitting a wedge into a green, and it doesn't spin back, and he looks at his caddy like, you know, what the hell just happened? You're not going to spin a fucking wedge on a Lynx golf course. This isn't, you know, the Travelers Championship or some other watered-down golf course as they presently present them in the United States where you can spin back your club. That's not how it works, especially downwind. It's like, are you really that dense that you can't figure that out and just play the run? I mean, it's unbelievable with how dumb he is. And another thing, if... the worst possible scenario would have been, you know, Jim Furyk shooting a 65. If that guy wins another major, I'm really just going to smash my head into a wall. He has to be the most boring golfer I've ever seen. I'm sure he's a nice guy, but, I mean, come on. It's like 20 minutes to line up a putt. He has that goofy swing, which has me thinking, it's like, well, why the hell can't I be a pro golfer if that guy can? And, God, just seeing him shoot a 65. It's like, really, we're going to have to worry about you at the PGA Championship again this year now?
Yeah, he's had his moments. I mean, he did have a nice win recently. It was him and I think it was also Matt Kuchar both doing pretty well earlier. I mean, not in majors, but I forget the names of the tournaments. There's so many sponsors. But yeah, he was actually making a run. That was kind of interesting. -7 for the final round, Jim Furyk. Yeah, I can't explain it either, but hey, steady wins the race sometimes. So, John, anything else you wanted to add as far as broadcasters, Furyk, Bubba, anything else from that angle?
Yeah, I mean, forget the most boring golfer. Furyk might be the most boring man in the world. I mean, it's just nothing exciting about him. I guess he's a big Steelers fan, but I guess he likes football, so I guess I'll give him credit for that. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's a nice guy too. He just defines the word boring. But yeah, Bubba. I mean, I think I posted an article the other day, and he's talking about how, you know, this is how big of a rock star his fame has. He said something like, "Well, I haven't read anything in the media, but I know it's all negative." He's like, "Okay, Bubba, how would you know it's negative if you haven't read anything?" But I mean. He's not that stupid. Actually, he knows he's getting killed for his course ambush, but he's killing the media there. But I'm sure 3 months ago when he was winning the Masters and he was America's darling, you know, he was lining up to do every interview and every late night talk show and everything, he didn't hate the media then. So quite the double standard there, Bubba. So that's all I have to say about him. He's just a complete fool, and I hope he doesn't win any tournaments in the near future. I will say that. I I guess golf kind of needs a villain. I actually said I enjoy rooting against him more than I do. I actually kind of feel bad for Tiger at this point. But I do enjoy rooting against Bubba. So there you go.
Yeah, I agree, though. He's an incredible heel. There's no doubt about that. I mean, he's dumb as a bag of rocks. And he's just so... You know what for me, what it is? He just seems like a big phony. Like, he's like, oh, everything's fine. I'm just a positive guy. Then he misses a shot, and he gets all... He starts getting into the caddy's business and just becomes a real dick on the course. I mean, you know, it's... You can't say you're one thing when you're something else, and I think that's my basic problem with Bubba Watson. I love the way that he can get like some of the shots he makes are really visually stimulating, but I think you guys hit the nail on the head. The guy does not know how to play golf. He can make good shots, but he's not good at golf. Does that make sense? Like, he doesn't have the tactical expertise in between the ears, right? Mike, anything else to add to that at all?
Did you just say that he's visually stimulating when he plays golf?
No, his shots are. Like, some of the shots he makes.
Well, still, that's a rather disturbing analogy to make. But, yeah, I would say that you're basically on the gist of it, that, yeah, he's a superb shot maker, but in terms of actually playing the game and, you know, course management is really the area that he is just horrible at. Like,
yeah.
I think I could probably... In fact, I know if I had any bit of talent close to him that I would manage courses much better than he does.
For sure. All right, so let's get into some of the other storylines from this year's Open Championship. I will have to give a serious good job out of you to Rory McIlroy's dad, who with a bunch of buddies invested several pounds, 400 pounds for his debt for the dad, and I think maybe they all collaborated on it. For a huge, like 300, I don't know if this is pounds or dollars, but 300,000 pound or dollar win. And the father picked up 171 of that 300,000. So he took his confidence in his son and made it pay off. I think that was a really interesting side storyline. I'm not sure if there's a slippery slope element to that, but personally, I think that was pretty cool. So I didn't even know you could make a bet like that. That a guy could win a major before a specific age, but that was pretty interesting. So now to the resident odds maker, John, your thoughts about Rory McIlroy's pretty big bet.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. His dad could bet that, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Good stuff.
I'm looking pretty much bet anything. So I'm not surprised. Imagine that he didn't win that. And, you know, next year we're in a pretty awkward conversation at dinner. Like, oh, hey, Roy, what the hell are you doing? Why don't you owe me $400? And I just fall my hand to that.
That's a decent point. And it was interesting, though, like the winning from that bet, like it paid out $300,000, and Rory McIlroy won like $1.7 million for the tournament. So, like, it was like almost as much as like a share of winning. The part of the tournament. So I thought that was interesting how the shares were, I mean, not exactly close together, but it was pretty interesting. Yeah, I know. I mean, that was a pretty cool deal. So, I mean, that's just something you can share with family for a while. I mean, it's a pretty neat storyline. Caroline Wozniacki, the bride-to-be but wasn't, that was about to get married to Rory McIlroy and left at the altar. Well, she ended up winning her tournament the same day. So, you know, we have the Open Championship winner, and she, having recently separated, wins her tennis match. It's just crazy. So, what is the message here? Like, you know, relationships with high-profile people don't work? I mean, Mike, get me out of this Sheeran territory. Anything else you wanted to add as far as the Open?
Well, regarding Rory and Caroline, I'd say that if you have a lot of money, flying around the world and fucking all the time is probably not a good thing to do if you want to succeed in a competitive physical sport. It drains you of your energy. regarding the bet, McIlroy's father really made that right in time because he made it when he was 15, I believe, and McIlroy at 16 shot 61 at Royal Portrush, where they will be having the 2019 U.S. Open, and that's, of course, record.
as a 16-year-old. So he got 500-to-1 odds. There's no way in hell he would have gotten those odds if he had placed that bet a year later. So I guess maybe we should be inviting him on for a gambling segment instead of – who was the guy on Tyler's investment?
Yeah.
Now Jerry's investments instead of Tyler's investment. That's something to look into.
Yeah, that would have. I think that was his 12 billion star lock of the week, Stone Cold. So that was pretty good. Nice job out of him. So, all right, I guess that wraps it up then as far as the Open Championship. It really was a great story. I think Rory winning it, from my point of view, he seems like a good dude, like a humble guy, from at least as far as I know. I mean, I only know about his Twitter and like the fact that his clubs got. You know, got left behind by United Airlines, and then he finally caught up to him. So obviously, his summer was off to a dubious start. To go from that to winning the Open, apparently that was a championship he wanted to win above all. Makes sense. I mean, he's from Northern Ireland, so the Open's a big deal in the UK. I think it's just a great moment. I mean, when you win the tournament, you've always wanted to win. For the Brits and for the Northern Irish, it is this tournament. It just makes it extra special. I mean, I think that's what was really brilliant about it. So I think I'll leave it to John to say anything else you had about the Open, and we'll move on to Ryder Cup coverage after that.
Yeah, I thought the best moment of it was when Rory was up there talking after the tournament. He goes, "Even standing here as a Manchester United fan," and everyone's like, "Whoa, whoa," you know, the whole thing of Liverpool fans. I thought that was pretty cool.
That was funny. I love that. Yeah, that was a great moment. Because that's a big rivalry. Oh, gosh, that was good. That was good. Oh, man.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Oh, that's all you got. No, but that was an unforgettable moment, too. I'm surprised nobody made more of that, because that was really, really hilarious. I just think that was cool. And he was just having a good time with that. All right, so onward to the next topic. We could preview the upcoming PGA tournament, which is technically sooner, but I know that the selection of the Ryder Cup team is a hot topic. So, Mike, I'd like you to have the floor first with this. A lot of rumblings about Tiger Woods making the team, but the reason for that is really unbeknownst to me. Honestly, he's not good. I don't think he really deserves to be on the team right now. So this is a big controversy for Tom Watson. How is he going to assess this, and how would you assess it?
Well, I said I was going to do this. I'm now going to read off a list of some notable players who are ahead of Tiger Woods on the FedEx Cup point race for the year. Because I mentioned that, I know I mentioned in a tweet a few days ago that Tom Watson was ahead of Tiger Woods, who was a 64-year-old man who was probably getting Social Security benefits at this point because of his age.
Yeah.
So that's pathetic. Yes, Tom Watson is ranked 210 in the Ryder Cup standings. Tiger Woods is ranked 214. Also ahead of Tiger Woods are Fred Couples, Mark Calcavecchia, Bernhard Langer, who's played one tournament all year, David Duval, Bob Estes, who I guess he took a break to play two tournaments this year from writing racist tweets about Obama, Dickie Pride, best name ever for a golfer. And finally, here's the topper. 10 spots ahead of Tiger Woods is none other than John Daly.
Oh, my gosh. John Daly. Ooh.
Now, unless Tiger Woods wins one of these, wins the PGA or the Bridgestone, he has no business being on the same continent as the Ryder Cup, let alone on the frickin' team.
Wow.
If he is on the team without doing one of those two things, you know that they're going to tell it's because the TV executives and everyone else who stands to make money from the ratings told Tom Watson, you have to pick him. You have to pick him. We're all going to lose this money, blah, blah, blah. And he succumbs to the pressure. Tom Watson is the one person who might have enough clout to just say, well, screw you. I'm picking the best team. But we'll see what happens here, because Watson beat him at the Open, which that should tell you all you need to know about Tiger's current state of his game.
of course, the Tiger fans are like, well, he also beat, he beat several other players. He should be, he beat Bubba Watson. Yeah, but Bubba Watson won the freaking Masters this year. Tiger hasn't done jack shit. So if Tiger Woods is on the team, well, first of all, he has a losing record at the Ryder Cup anyway. He doesn't give a shit about it. The only reason he wants to be on the team is because it would be embarrassing for him, you know, just not to be selected. But, you know, really, unless he wins Bridgestone, which honestly, as bad as he looked, it wouldn't shock me because he could win on that course with like one off, basically.
Yeah.
He has no business being on the team. I mean, he's not even close. You'd be picking him for the name only, and if we're gonna pick players for the name only, well, we might as well put the two Ryder Cup captains picks should be Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods. If that's criteria for going by.
Wow. No, strong words, but very accurate in this case. But I will say this: the Bridgestone is what one of his babies, right? Isn't that one of his great tournaments? Is go tos like one of his good tournaments, the one that he's really good at?
Yeah, that's probably his.
I think he's gonna win it again. I mean, it's in Ohio. It's relatively flat. I'm assuming it's the same course as last year, but yeah, probably gonna win that tournament. But let's go to John for his thoughts about the Ryder Cup selection. Tom Watson is an unfair position. I don't think it's right that they have to put him, that he's even have, he has to make the decision. I think if you base it just on golf, it doesn't look like Tiger's really going to make the cut, so to speak. So your thoughts about the whole affair with the Ryder Cup?
Yeah, I mean, certainly you can't make a, as of right now, you can't pick him. I mean, it's just, he hasn't played any golf, and he hasn't played well. I mean, he's not even going to qualify for the FedEx playoffs at this point. I mean, unless he shows you something in these next two tournaments, you can't pick him. And I would love for the Americans to show up with that team at the Ryder Cup of, you know, Bob Estes, John Daly, Mark Calcavecchia, Fred Couples.
Oh, my gosh.
And Bernard Langer. I wonder how many points they would win. Langer wouldn't be on the team. He'd probably be on the team side. He'd kick our ass, really. I mean, that guy's still a pretty good player, but,
yeah.
I mean, it's just, yeah, that team wouldn't beat, you know, anyone on the LPGA Tour, but, you know, crazy stuff. I wouldn't pick Tiger. And I certainly don't envy Watson's position either, because we've kind of gone through this before with tax doctrine, but I think Watson has enough clout to where he could not play Tiger, but it's going to be interesting to see what he does.
Yeah, I hope, you know, it might be a situation where he really needs to just simply take action despite what the pressure around him says, and that's not easy to do. So, yeah, that's a storyline, no doubt. And, my gosh, all these guys that Mike mentioned, it's like the greatest hits of the 80s. I mean, Bernhard Langer, Tom Watson. It's like I went back 30 years. That's crazy. Oh, my gosh, that's funny. All right, so then let's get into the anything else coming up in golf. And the PGA tournament is probably the most notable example. It never usually gets the same kind of, well, at least from my point of view, it doesn't get the same kind of hype as the other three majors. In fact, I think a lot of people probably don't even know it's a major, but it is. And it's the fourth major, it's a final one, and it tends to be a pretty nice course. So let's talk about the PGA championship coming up. Mike, you have the first word.
Well, you might hear some of the pro-Tiger press being like, oh, what a great course it is for Valhalla. He's won at Valhalla before. Yeah, he's won at Valhalla before, except they completely redesigned the course, stretched it by about 600 yards, and it's nothing like the course he won on. So if you hear that argument, just please ignore it, because it's just full of nonsense. In terms of the course, kind of a bit of a letdown, I think. I've seen the layout. I'm not particularly impressed with it. You know, next year we have Whistling Straits for the PGA, so that'll be that's one of the best courses in the world, so you can't go wrong with that. I think really the story going into the PGA is going to be, you know, Rory has a tendency to get very hot and win multiple tournaments over a short period of time. Like, when he won the PGA in 2012, he then followed up with two FedEx Cup wins, and that was over, like, a span of 6 weeks. So he won, like, three times in 6 weeks, won 2 weeks in a row. If he can win this, it would make the Masters even bigger. But on the other hand,
can already tell that part of him seems to be looking towards the Masters, because that would complete the career Grand Slam. If he wins another PGA, he wins another PGA. But really, I would absolutely love for him to win the PGA, because that might finally put an end, or at least significantly diminish the usual noise that we hear about Tiger Woods every year leading up to the Masters, because that would really make McIlroy the story. Going for the career Grand Slam, and not only that, going for three majors in a row, yeah. that would be great for the game to really, you know, kind of move on to the next generation.
Yeah, I mean, and I think if Rory can just, I mean, if he can handle the consistency like he had in the Open, he's got a very good shot to win this tournament too. There's going to be some challengers, though, that may not have challenged as much in the Open, but this is going to be very interesting. I haven't had a chance to really look at the rest of the field yet, because I don't think they necessarily announce everybody until you get close to the date. But this is the storyline right now. Rory is the story. Rory is the story. I love it. It rhymes. But, John, your thoughts about the PGA Championship coming up?
Yeah, I mean, I think the last time they played it at Valhalla, it was like Tiger and Bob May had that pretty epic playoff. I mean, even on the guy you haven't heard from him in a long time, Bob May, I bet he even had a Tiger on that point close too. But, I think it was like 19 or 20 under par the last time they played it there. So hopefully these changes they made to the course deter that. Because I honestly hate it when a major gets over 10 under. This weekend kind of bothered me. Guys shooting 6-7 under par a day. I mean, a major championship should be about testing all facets of your game, and it really shouldn't be that easy. I mean, I don't necessarily like it, you know, so hard that the course isn't playable, but it shouldn't be 17, 18 under par winning these tournaments. But, Mike did a nice job there with the kind of storyline. Obviously, Rory's going to be a big one. I really can't think of anything else, you know, major off the top of my head other than Tiger and what he's going to do. And then just the normal cast of characters that you'd expect to see at these events. I'll be interested to see actually Ricky Fowler and see if he can get a fourth top five finish in these majors. That would be a pretty incredible season.
Yeah, I mean, he does pretty well at the Masters, Rory McIlroy. Certainly he's had his moments. So if he wins the PGA, I mean, that the momentum from that into the Masters is going to be staggering. I know there's going to be a lot of time in between, but you can just imagine the amount of story that goes with that. That would really be quite amazing. All right, so any other issues of golf that you wanted to address? Mike, again, you have the first word.
Well, something to follow now, we don't really need to get into the details about them, is that the Olympic rankings are out. First Olympic rankings, because remember, we're going to have golf at the 2016 Olympics.
Yep.
So the way it works is that you have the top 60 players qualify, but it's a maximum of 4 players per country. So that's something to keep an eye on to see how that starts to play out. I'm not sure exactly what the criteria is. It's not the exact same thing as the world ranking. They're not just going to do it off that. So that's coming up. Now, on a more personal note, is that I bought weekly tickets to the Barclays, which is going to be a Ridgewood, which is basically around the corner from my house.
Nice.
And it'll be nice to see McIlroy again, because I remember it was actually 2010. I had actually never been to a pro golf. Well, I had been to one pro golf tournament when I was like 10 years old, and it was a senior tour event. But, you know, that was the days of when Arnold Palmer was still playing. In fact, Lee Trevino actually won the tournament.
Wow.
The Cadillac something at Montclair. So, I hadn't been to a pro tournament in 10 years. And what I did was I got there real early in the morning on Saturday, and I followed McIlroy for about 14 holes. And that was in 2010 when, you know, he hadn't won a major yet, was still – I mean, people knew who he was, but really, unless you were big into golf and really followed, you know, the European, if you knew about his accomplishments as an amateur in Europe, you would know about McIlroy. But other than that, like, the gallery wasn't that big. And he put on an incredible run over the first 6 or 7 holes. Then he made a couple bogeys and dropped back a bit. But it's just going to be almost like a, I don't know, it's going to be nice to see, to follow him again, you know, 4 years later, and after he's accomplished so much in that short of a time span.
It's been quite a ride. I mean, and again, he's got a ways to go. And it's really cool that you got to see him as he was, you know, as he was, as legend was starting to grow. That's actually a special feeling, because, like, when you catch on to something before it gets big, then you can say, I was there, you know. You're like Mike Fran. Mike, you know, like, I was there. I remember being with Rory before he was really popular, and that sort of thing. That's pretty cool. John, any other things to report from the world of golf?
No, not really. We're coming into a pretty busy time. You got the Sheehan Canadian Open this week, but after that, I mean, with pretty much 1 month, I mean, you got big tournaments. You got the Riverstone Invitational in Ohio. You got the PGA. And then you have another Sheehan event to include the regular season in the FedEx Cup. And then you got 4 straight weeks of the FedEx Cup. And then you have the Ryder Cup right after that. So by the time the FedEx Cup playoffs start, we'll be into football season. So it's a very exciting time, even though you know, it's kind of dead in sports right now. It'll be picking up very shortly, and golf's a big part of that as we end the summer.
Yeah, and it's good that we had that, we have golf to help bridge the gap a little. But it's still going to be a long wait. Speaking of football, I'm sure you know the college football season right around the corner. I'm excited to do the preview with you and Ron again.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. I mean, I've been watching these top 25 game thing on ESPNU, and it's getting very excited for the season. So I'm certainly looking forward to doing that with you and Ron in a couple weeks now, I would guess.
Yeah, I looked at it on the calendar. It looks like it's going to be either the 13th or the 20th. I can't really decide which one yet, but probably the 13th, since we did it about the 15th last year. So, no, this will be good. It'll be king. I can't wait to get into it. I'll just prep and got my magazine ready to go. Athlon, it'll be good. Yeah, I'm not doing Phil Steele this year. Are you?
I did buy him. I'll read it a little bit, but I was more about the Athlon. I really like their magazine. Well, I've been reading the stuff online with USA Today, so I'm pretty much covered, but I just bought Steele out of morbid curiosity to see if he kind of changed his style, but sadly he's still talking about the best in a better page, so who cares?
I don't think he did. I mean, everything, his style has looked the same since 1994, man. I mean, like Office 3, you know?
Exactly.
Oh, man. Wait, what outlandish predictions do you think you'll have this year? Like, you know, Clemson wins the championship or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I already saw one that had, like, Georgia and UCLA as surprise team, which is absolutely ridiculous. Like, on the year. Like, saying, oh, yeah, the Broncos, surprise team in the NFL this year. All right.
I know, right? Oh, you better watch out for those 49ers. It's a surprise in the NFC West. You know,
exactly.
Oh, man, this is good. I can't wait to get into all that. So I think that's it for me.
I have a college football prediction for you guys.
Okay.
Rutgers wins the Big Ten.
Oh, God, Rutgers. Oh, my goodness.
That
would be fun.
It's going to be a long year for on the board.
Yeah. If he's not banned, right? Again. But
no, he posted today. He's not banned.
He did post it. That's right. I remember. Hard to tell sometimes. I just tune him out now. All right, Mike, this has been great. Enjoy everything. I hope your golf game's going all right, too. But other than that, I think that's it for me. Guys, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you very much for your time again. It's really a lot. It's always a good time breaking down the golf. I look forward to these upcoming events, and we'll see if we end up with a big clown show at the Ryder Cup. Guys, it's been fun. Have a wonderful rest of your week. We'll catch up soon. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks, Dave. Talk to you later.
All right, fellas. That's it for...
Thanks, good to talk to you.
All right, fellas. That's Mike in North Jersey, John in Connecticut, and I'm Dave Medina here on the program. Kevin on the Cape will not be joining us tonight. He has some other business to attend to, so we will catch up with him next week as we do random questions. So for the time being, I think we'll just stay here. And if you do have any residual questions you do want to ask, you can ask him here, but I'm probably only going to hang around for about 5 minutes until we sign off for the evening. A couple notes from the world of sports. I can't see it on my screen, but we have Manchester United hosting or playing the LA Galaxy at the Rose Bowl. People can't get like no buzz for this game at all, but the stadium, it looks pretty good. We have an image in from Fox Sports 1, and the attendance looks like it is solid. A lot better than most UCLA games, as a matter of fact. That tells you how good this matchup could be. So as far as who wins, I mean, I have no idea. I mean, I've never really seen these teams have never played each other before, so I have no read on that. But Manchester United, obviously one of the great franchises in sport. They're not that good right now, but they should be a decisive favorite over the Galaxy. It was the equivalent I can come up with is when UCSB basketball hosts North Carolina. I mean, North Carolina is just the creme de la creme, and UCSB can sometimes barely get out of their own small conference. So that's where I would equate it. It might be close for a little while, but I think Manchester United should pull away, and we'll see how that one goes. Dodgers having a terrible... What am I doing? I mean, it's just sounding like a regular sports show all of a sudden. But yeah, the Dodgers are, just having just a dismal week. And I think most of that is just the starting pitching, though. They got the two worst starters in the rotation in Pittsburgh, and they both were just abysmal. And so, considering that Beckett and Herron, Josh Beckett's been having a pretty good season, but it was a bad start. I mean, there's really nothing more to it than that. The bigger story to me from that game on Tuesday night was that the bullpen did nothing. I mean, literally nothing. They were sieves, giving up runs all over the place. I think that was pretty lame, actually, the way that transpired. And then tonight, Dan Herron, who just hasn't been pitching too well this year, had another pretty bad outing, and the Pirates really took care of business right away. I mean, the first inning they were up 4-0, and then that was that. So they won, I think, 6-1, and the Dodgers just really licking their wounds as they go to San Francisco to play the Giants, who have played better. And the Giants got into the All-Star break with a little bit of a head of steam, and if they win tonight, they are going to be, I think, at least a game or two games up on the Dodgers going into the weekend series. But the good news for LA is that since they are only about one or two games, behind, they're going to have a chance to make up that ground really quickly. If they win the series, then they'll be right back in the thing. And they already are either way. But I think as long as the Dodgers don't get swept in San Francisco, they're good. So this is what we call filler. We can fill up time really quickly with a lot of basic headlines about things. But I figured that without the junk band here, I was just going to cut the show a little bit early. But I do want to. I do think that I would take this opportunity to say stuff I normally wouldn't on the show. All I really want to say is that the Lakers offseason is not as bad as everybody says. I just think people need to relax a little bit. I mean, you can't get all the big-name free agents all the time. And the Lakers didn't. The best free agent available, really, was Carmelo Anthony. And not getting him is not the end of the world. I mean, he's not getting any younger. And he's a very good player. But I think it's I don't necessarily think that that you have to make the splashy moves to have a good offseason. They had Julius Randle. They got Ed Davis. Both of these are solid moves. And I grant you the money for Jeremy Lin was obviously not smart, but having Jeremy Lin is smart. I think he's pretty good. So he takes a lot of shots. Fair enough. It might not be the worst thing in the world to have some aggressive shooters on the team. So I think it was a good offseason. I mean, that was not bad. They re-signed Jordan Hill. Too much money, yes, but again, Lakers have the money. Wesley Johnson, who I like, very athletic. I think even Xavier Henry is going to get a extension. Nick Young re-signed. This team is not going to win the finals, But it would have taken a lot more than two or three splashy moves to win the finals anyway. This is a fundamental change that has to really start from the top. Or start from the bottom. Bring yourself up. And then become a playoff contender that way. The Lakers will be fine. I think in a few years, as long as they play their cards right. They haven't played them perfectly. But this team will be fun to watch. I mean, I think my message to all the Laker fans out there is stop expecting to go to the finals every year. That's not realistic. And two, let's just have some fun with this. You know, we'll see where it goes. I mean, maybe it won't pan out. Maybe they won't even be above 500. But I certainly give them a better shot than last year's team. These guys look pretty good. I know they lost Pau Gasol too, but just watch them. They're going to be faster. They're going to be more athletic. And I think they might even be a better defensive team than last year. Actually, I know they'll be a better defensive team than last year. Give them a chance. I think they might be pretty good. So that's all I've got. No random questions tonight. So that's our show. We hope that you enjoyed it. It was certainly a lot of fun. I want to also thank John in Connecticut and Mike in North Jersey. Really good time tonight. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. It was really a lot of fun. So take care. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the Dodger-Giants series if you get to catch any of that. And we'll see you next time.